Good evening and welcome to Shattered Lives. This is Donna R. Gore, a.k.a. Lady Justice. We at Shattered Lives are very excited to welcome you to this unique show, taking you beyond the details of the crime and the perpetrator, getting to the heart of what crime victim families experience and what they need in the aftermath of the crime. Prior to the show, please go to www.donnagore.com or imaginepublicity.com to read the background of the case or organization featured every week before our show is aired. And please, please don't forget, in case you can't listen live from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern, you can always go at any time, anywhere to our archival feature. So welcome this evening. This is Donna, Lady Justice, welcoming you on Saturday, the 7th of April. And we have a very special couple tonight for guests. But first, before I bring them in, I want to blow my own horn a little bit. I want to encourage everyone, again, to go to my website, to read my blogs, and, of course, to come to my show each Saturday and on archives. But I invite you to also, if you have any type of group or presentation of which I might have expertise, to invite me to your group, especially if you're in a warm weather climate. And please be sure to go to the Employment Express blog, where you'll see my future goals for employment and my aspirations for the future. And if we have a match, I want to talk to you. So without further ado, let me bring in, it's such a pleasure to have another set of eyes and ears with me, my wizard behind the curtain, my PR manager, my friend, Delilah, president of Imagine Publicity. Hi, Delilah. How's everything in Myrtle Beach?
Doing great, Donna. Happy to be here. I'm just really, Denny has been, Denny Griffin, one of our guests, I'm blowing off this whole thing. But anyway, he's always been one of my heroes. He's written some amazing true crime books about the Las Vegas mob and done some really cool things with, around the mob. And if you're a mob fan, it's just fascinating. Truly, it is.
Well, you know, my favorite, when I got to know them this past October, was a book that he wrote about some shenanigans going on in a morgue. And the title mm-hmm. has slipped my mind, but I'm sure he can remind me. I heard the story about that, and I think that's fascinating as well.
Well, yeah, and a lot of the cases, I think that they've been involved in Crime Wire, which is Denny's show along with Susan Murphy Milano, they've actually had on a lot of cases that have to do with problems in the medical examiner's office, and I think it probably goes back to that book that Denny wrote.
Yeah, no doubt. He is a consummate storyteller, and I think that's half the reason I wanted to have him as a guest.
Yes.
And one other thing before we bring him in, I just want to mention to the listeners that coming up, I believe it's next month, we are going to have a special feature here on Shattered Lives, a little different change of pace, in that we are going to start doing occasionally, you and I, some movie reviews around the theme of Shattered Lives, anything and everything pertaining to that theme, and we will be doing Siskel and Ebert, right, Delilah?
Oh, but yeah, that sounds like fun.
I
don't know
so
when
and,
you think I'm going to have time to sit and watch movies, Donna, but I'll do what I can.
Well, I know. Well, we fit it in somehow, don't we? You know, you're the wizard, and I know you can do it. So anyway, without further ado, let's bring in this couple that treated me like gold last October. I mean, you treat me like gold too, but they did as well. They're hanging out with me for a full week last October. Denny and Faith, otherwise known as Bear Griffin, welcome to Shattered Lives.
Thank you, Donna. It's good talking to you.
Well, thanks. It's a pleasure to have you. And where's Denny? Are you there?
Oh, he's here.
I'm here. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have a topic to talk about that not many people know about. They know about They know about your background with PI, as a PI. They know about your authorships with the mob and the morgue and things of that nature. But before we get into that very difficult topic, I want you to tell the listeners just a little bit about how Shattered Lives came about, because you and Faith were part and parcel of that. And I wondered if you'd just go over that for a couple of minutes to kind of bring them up to date.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Donna. Yes,
okay.
last October, we were on a cruise to the Mexican Riviera, I believe. That's when we first met in person. And during the cruise, we spent several hours talking about the concept for the program Shattered Lives, and did a lot of discussion and tossed some ideas around, and I think that was the start of where we are today. How we got here today was that you took the ideas and put the package together, the show together, and here we are.
Right, and like I say, I think it's very exciting. We're kind of I'm 2 whole months old here. So it's upward and onward as far as I'm concerned, and I'm very grateful for all of your input and your help with that. And I think it is truly a unique concept, unique mission. And stay tuned, everybody, because we have a new blog coming up on that very topic about being on the radio. Sure to be entertaining. Now, Delilah, I have a set of questions here that I would like to ask, but I always like to ask you because you have a different perspective, and you are a mother, and this topic that we're talking about involves death, violent death, but accidental death, and I just can't imagine going through experiencing what Denny and Faith may have one day, having a vibrant 18-year-old, and the next day they're gone. Just what struck you when you heard the background that we heard as a mother, as a grandmother, about this?
Well, just like you say, I cannot imagine how, you know, what that would be like, and I don't ever want to. And
right.
You know, it's one of those unfortunate instances that can actually define someone's life. I mean, I'm sure as we've talked through this hour, we'll learn that life changes at that very moment, and none of us are guaranteed. And I think in my own experience and from reading what I did, I can see that when life is gone that quickly, we take a different perspective on ourselves. We kind of go inward and look and see how to reprioritize our lives. At least I think, just like I say, in my own experience, I didn't have a child that I lost, but I have lost very close family members. And for me, that was kind of what happened. And I'm sure everyone deals in their grief and their pain in different ways. And I think that's the thing that we probably want to impart to our listeners, and how they can, if they're faced with a situation like this, how in the world do you go on?
Right. Well, then maybe it might be very appropriate from the standpoint of motherhood. Then, Faith, I'm going to direct my first question to you. Can you tell me why did you and Denny agree to do this show? It's my understanding that you haven't really talked formally about this situation. So I'm very grateful to you, but I want you to tell the listeners why you felt it was important.
Basically, it's because when it happens to you, your world has come to an end. You don't know if you're going to survive it, how you're going to handle it. You have other children that you have to live for, yet you don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
I want the parents, the grieving parents, family, siblings, whatever, to know that life does go on. It's not going to happen overnight. It's
right.
going to take time. And you're
right.
going to have to you're going to have to find your own way to deal with
right.
it.
Uh-huh. Well, and that's what you want to impart to listeners as a general rule. Now, I know, Denny, as a private investigator, you must have been very torn, because here you were as a father experiencing this, but you're also an investigator. And I wonder, because we didn't have the post up for very long, maybe some people haven't digested some of the information that is on the website, and you gave us a nice, concise description. Would you be so kind as to just reiterate the narrative that you gave us about what did happen with Kim, and then we can take it from there?
Yes, Kim had graduated from high school in June of 86. She was 18 years old, and she was due to start college that September. And on August 5th of 86, she had gone out swimming. We were in upstate New York, and to a favorite swimming hole about 40 miles from where we were living. And I was working with the sheriff's department at the time in Madison County, New York, and I was working the graveyard shift. And I remember Bear and I had been out. We got home in the afternoon, and all of a sudden there's a knock on the door.
Mm-hmm.
When I opened the door, there's one of my fellow deputy sheriffs there in the company of a state trooper. So I knew right away something was wrong. I didn't know what, but I knew it wasn't a social visit.
Uh-huh.
And then they broke the news that Kim had been involved in an automobile accident in an adjoining county and had not survived.
Right. Wow. I just can't imagine being hit with that news at the door. Have you and your position as a private investigator had to deliver that news to other people?
I did as a police officer, as a deputy sheriff, and also as a village patrolman. But that only happened once, and it never happened after we had gotten the news. Thankfully, it certainly was even the thought of it, was difficult prior to August 5th of 86.
Sure.
And I don't really know. I think it would have been that much more difficult had I had to do that afterwards. So by the luck of the draw, I was never called upon after that to have to make such an announcement.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a fortunate thing. That is also extremely stressful and heartbreaking for everyone. I know that from the description that you had given that it was classified as an accident, and there were several components involved with respect to an elderly person driving who may have panicked. Now, I don't know. I wasn't exactly sure whether or not alcohol may or may not have been involved with any of the cars that were involved, and a couple of people, as well as Kim, the other driver, was killed. Can you kind of sort this out for us in terms of what type of components applied or what type of charges applied, whether it was there vehicular manslaughter or homicide involved, or when people die instantly, does that change the whole scenario with respect to how the case goes forward?
Yeah, well, of course, any charges that would have been filed would have been against the driver of the other car, and he was deceased. So there was no one to charge from a criminal standpoint.
Wow.
There was no alcohol involved or drugs involved. It was an accident, apparently, and again, the driver of the other vehicle died, so there was no way to question him. But based on the accident reconstruction, it appeared that he'd been going at a high rate of speed. When he crested a hill, the car Kim was a passenger in was near the top of the hill, going the opposite direction. He, according to the evidence at the scene, the skid marks and so forth, he apparently slammed on the brakes. He must have panicked. That's all we can assume.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did, the car, he lost control of the vehicle. His car ran into their car and forced it over an embankment.
Wow.
And there was nothing. I do want to mention something, lest I forget. You mentioned earlier the book, The Morgue, that I wrote.
Yeah.
That was about a medical examiner's office. I wrote it as a fiction, but it was based on a true story. And one of the things this medical examiner was doing, allegedly, was taking tissue without consent from children well up to the age of 18 and selling the tissues to laboratories for medical experiments.
Oh, my goodness.
When the guy didn't keep any records, so we had to backtrack and go to the where he was selling the stuff, believed, because they had to keep records of where all their tissues were sourced. So by working backwards, we got a list, and it turned out this particular medical examiner had been the one that handled Kim's body.
Is that right?
Oh, my word.
Yeah,
wow.
So when I found out what I was going to have to do, I talked it over with Bear, and I said, look, I don't know what I'm going to find here, but she was at his office, so I said, and she was in that age group. So fortunately, her name was not one of those that he illegally removed tissues from.
Tissue.
But I don't know how I'd have handled that had her name appeared there.
Oh, I just, again, another insult or injury, another re-victimization. The fact that, you know, these people died, do you have the sense that, you know, you didn't get any sense of resolution, any kind of justice because, you know, you didn't get your due?
Well, we did, and we ended up with a civil action, wrongful
mm-hmm.
death action, and to add to complicate matters, Kim was out, there were four people in that vehicle, her and three of her friends, all about the same age group. Well, it
mm-hmm.
turned out the vehicle that she was in had been, was owned by the father of the driver. He had let his son take the car. Well, for one reason or another, the car, their insurance had lapsed, so you had an uninsured vehicle now. And
wow, how does that change the picture then?
Well, it complicated everything because now you have to go a different route when there's no insurance. And
mm-hmm.
The father who owned the car, the very day after the accident, he apparently suspected that there could be some liability, so he went and transferred all of his assets to another party.
His business,
his bank accounts, his house. So he got rid of everything. He thought it didn't hold up because it was an obvious ploy to conceal assets. But the point was it complicated everything. So when you have enough to deal with,
mm-hmm.
you know, from the initial incident, and then as you're trying to get sorted out and get organized, get things done, then you have to contend with that on top of it. So it just served to complicate matters.
Oh, I'm sure. Did he end up being convicted with respect to the not carrying insurance and all of that, or was he held responsible in any way?
No, he was not. What happened was we, of course, had to get an attorney, and it ended up that his assets that he tried to conceal were not the court. This was all a civil action, nothing criminal. So his assets were made available. For us, it wasn't really a financial thing. I mean, it wasn't like, oh, here's a chance to make some money. That was never an issue. It was, you know, there were certain expenses and so forth, and these individuals, or the father, as the owner of that vehicle, who was responsible for having it on the road with lapsed insurance,
right.
Needed to be held accountable. So that was the main issue there. It wasn't really a financial thing.
Yeah.
It was more
Denny, it's the accountability that is so important, that someone has to be held accountable for when things go wrong. You know, maybe it's not so much a point the finger of blame to someone, because obviously the person who caused this, you know, you couldn't point the finger of blame to him. So there's another frustration piled on top of it. But the fact that, you know, you feel like something, somewhere, somebody has to be held accountable for some part of this.
Oh, you are exactly right. That's, you know, that's the thing. It's one thing to forgive, but you don't, these situations, you don't forget. And the way these people handled this whole thing was very upsetting, and it was unnecessary, actually, but you know, you deal with all kinds of different people in this life.
So was there, let's follow up on Delilah's question, was there any accountability in any way from any system entity person?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you that the reason we went into court was because another girl that was in, there were three girls and the young man that was driving. The
mm-hmm.
second girl that was in the back seat with Kim was also ejected. Now, she didn't end up under the first car, but her legs were really damaged badly, and they had a lot of medical expenses that had to be paid. Therefore, we went with them and our lawyer to discuss what had happened, and the wrongful death was because there were no guardrails or whatever alongside that road. And as we were discussing this, the attorney for the town or county, whichever, told us point blank that if we thought we were going to get a lot of money, we were wrong because Kim had no worth. She wasn't working.
Oh, please.
She wasn't working. She was a student. She had no income, and she had no worth.
So therefore,
I can't believe someone would say that.
They did.
Oh, my. I just, that turns my stomach that somebody would say that. Oh, my God. Faith, what, I know that she was, she had just graduated high school and she was intending to go to college, correct?
Right.
In a couple of months or a month? What,
within a couple of weeks she was due to go.
What was her intended major and what were her aspirations going forward?
She wanted to be a psychologist, a children's psychologist.
Really?
That was her hope.
Uh-huh. And what led her to that decision? What can you tell us a bit about her personally and the kinds of activities she was involved in high school or that led her to that decision?
She was always helping somebody. She was just that type of kid. There was above our home in Verona, there was a home for handicapped children. And I didn't know how involved she was. I know she always talked to them, et cetera. We got a beautiful letter from one of the mothers of one of the young men that lives there, and he had asked her to send us $5 of his own money because he just loved Kim. We got several letters like that from parents that had special needed children
mm-hmm.
That went out of her way to help them in school as well as the neighbor kids. She loved her nieces dearly. She was just a very helpful girl. And she had a lot of friends. I mean, she wasn't a loner. She had many friends as well. She was just an all-out kid.
Mm-hmm. And it was just through happenstance that they happened to go to this swimming hole. This is something that they were doing, you know, like after graduation someplace they had been before?
Apparently, one of the gals that was with them went there quite often. They had a camp up near there. Kim had never been there before. This was her first time.
Oh, okay. And, well, you know, it's hard to know what she would have done. You know, you might say, if only, but how do you reconcile that in your mind? Are there particular things that you do now, specifically, whether it be on an anniversary date or at other times of the year, that you do just in her memory to memorialize her or particular organizations you may get involved with Danny or Faith?
Well, first of all, we started a support group for bereaved parents. There was nothing in our area at the time, and I felt that if somebody was going through it, then maybe we could help each other. There was another mother, her daughter had been killed within 2 weeks after Kim. And we did start the support group. Then we started a sibling group with her sister, Pam.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that the meetings were beneficial because the parents were able to talk. It's very uncomfortable to discuss this with people that haven't been there. They have no clue as to what you're going through.
Right. I've been there too. Yep.
The support group, I felt, was very beneficial. We were able to talk, but the problem was I have my religion. Without it, I would have gone nowhere. The other lady was very angry at God, and over a period of several months, I felt that our differences in religion would cause problems, so I backed out. I then started writing letters to people that lost children in our area to let them know that how difficult it was in the beginning, but as time went on, things would get better. But in reality, I have to admit, I ended up in therapy. And I went to therapy for well over a year.
Mm-hmm.
There you can talk and say and cry and act out whatever you feel, because that's what they're there for.
Right.
I am not ashamed to say I went to therapy. I recommend it highly to anybody that is having a difficult time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing of it is we all come to a point in our lives when things like this happen that we are at our weakest point. And there has to be support. There has to be something out there that just kind of holds your head all together. And
mm-hmm. That's right.
I agree with you, Faith. I think therapy for a lot of people is a lifesaver.
It was for me. I know that.
It really is.
I
don't know how many other children did you have, and how did they handle this tragedy, and how, as a family, were there consequences to them that continue on to today, maybe?
My daughter Pam was 5 years older than Kim. She was like a little mother to her. She went through it almost as a parent. She really, really had a difficult time. My son and Kim were 17 months apart. They fought like kids. They loved like kids. And the day that she died, fight. Rob was never able to get over that fight that they had.
Oh,
to this day, he really carries that with him. He can't go to the cemetery. He has a very difficult time. And my daughter Pam and I try to talk to him, but we push him.
It was just one of those sibling rivalry kinds of things that I remember fighting with my siblings all the time. It's just the thing you do when you grow up.
Yeah, it's a kid thing. Everybody does it.
Right.
And we tell him that, but it had to be that day, which is too bad.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that is such a burden. And
yep.
It's just too bad that there isn't a way that he can relieve himself of that or do something to make him feel better.
I tried to get him to go to therapy. He went twice, and he didn't want to go anymore. Apparently, they wanted him to talk, so therefore he couldn't. Pam and I have talked to him. And on the anniversary of her death, we always get together as a family, of course. On her birthday, Pam always, since she's buried in New York, Pam always puts a Christmas wreath on the stone. In the spring, Pam and I will go together and plant the flowers. And now Pam has two adult daughters, so they also are involved in that if they're not working. But Rob can't go to the cemetery.
Yeah. Wow. It sounds like, you know, this is a situation where it's going to torment him always, and that's so unfortunate, you know. I really feel empathy for him.
Well, I think, too, Donna, it also goes to show, even within a family, how differently people deal with the grief and the pain and the tragedy, that
exactly.
Everyone deals with it in their own way, in their own time, and the results are going to be different as well.
Yeah.
Now, Denny,
you're
as you all
right.
know, is a do-it-and-get-it-over-with kind of guy, and his whole thing was organizing everything, and that's
mm-hmm.
how he dealt with it. I, at the time, thought, doesn't he have any feelings, but friends of ours told us how bad he was handling it in his own private time. But when he was with the family itself, he was Mr. Rock.
Yeah.
And I guess that's how he had to handle it, you know?
Right. We're all different. Denny, how is your – I know your emotions and your perspective have you know, changed immeasurably because of this, but in terms of any cases that you work on now with people, I'm sure that enters into – the scenario with respect to empathy and compassion and whatnot, but do you do anything in particular since Kim's passing with respect to how you deal with other victims?
Well, I have a much better feel now and understanding for what they're going through.
Uh-huh.
It's something once you've had that, you know, there's certain things that happen to you over your lifetime that always stay with you. And and that this certainly is one of those things on the tragedy side. And I think I'm much more patient and tolerant and able to deal with people, because almost all the people we talk to for Crime Wire, for example, have lost a loved one. Frequently, it's a child. Normally,
yep.
in those cases, it's due to, you know, criminal activity. But
mm-hmm.
the point is, it's still the loss of a child.
Right.
And I think I'm much more tolerant, because when you're talking to people that are going through that, even if it was from years ago, it's still painful. It never goes away. And sometimes it's a little tough to get them. You think they're not being cooperative or something. And I'm able to understand that for some people, it's just too painful to talk about, even if it's been 10 or 15 years since the...
Sure.
So I think I'm much more capable of dealing with people who are going through or have gone through that kind of a loss.
Mm-hmm.
At least I hope so. And we were talking a few minutes ago, Bear was mentioning about Rob and Kim having had a fight, an argument, that day before Kim left the house. And I guess as human beings, we all have certain emotions, sometimes tough to control, anger, for example. And but I always in the back of my mind try to think, you know, if I have an issue with someone, you know, especially a family member or a close friend.
Right.
To try to resolve that as quickly as possible.
Immediately. Right.
Yeah, and even if, you know, even if you still have a disagreement, but at least end up as friends.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, your family, depending on the situation. But don't walk out of that house or that restaurant or whatever with
right.
that animosity in the air, if you can help it. Like I say, we're all human beings. We have our feelings and our emotions. It's not an easy thing to do, but because you just never know. And,
well,
you know, sometimes
it's
you don't...
true. It's that old adage of, you know, never go to bed mad at people. Or what I like to say is, you know, life is just too short, and we know this personally, to have, you know, ongoing arguments or, you know, you read about these families that have grudges for years against other family. I mean, I can't conceive of that. I just cannot. So I think what you're saying is so true. And I'm just wondering, have you ever found it helpful? I know I have in my career with respect to disabilities. Have you ever shared, excuse me, have you ever shared with people that you're working with that you also have a personal loss, you know, to try to help them or establish a rapport if you're, you know, if they're very apprehensive about trying to share with you, you know, does it help the situation?
If I feel it's appropriate, I'll mention it, but I don't go into detail. I don't want people to think, I mean, they usually contact us about their case. And I don't want them to think that it's all about me or that I'm going to. So if I get a chance to say, you know, I'm familiar with what you're feeling, I kind of let it go with that. I don't go into great detail about it.
Right. Right. I understand. Yeah. Well, you know, I looked up some interesting research this morning. And with respect to, and I don't know how much applies, but they were talking about elderly drivers. And using the 2009 Census Bureau data, and you said speed was a factor, that there were 33,800 fatalities due to speed. The fatal accidents from ages 65 to 75 plus years were between 3,500 and 3,800, or at least 7% of the fatal accidents for the most current census were, you know, between 65 and over 75. Excuse me. Take a sip of water here. Can you tell us a little bit? Do you know any background at all with respect to that elderly driver? And you're sure, were there any medications that he was taking that might have been in there to consider it, you know, driving under the influence of medications?
No, the best we could come up with was that he was late for an appointment.
For his daughter.
Something to do with his daughter, had to get her somewhere, and that was the reason, supposedly, behind the speed.
There was not,
as far as any alcohol or medication or drugs involved, that was determined. So about the only reasonable explanation for his driving conduct that day was that he was late for an appointment, was trying to get there, and just used very poor judgment. I guess that would be the bottom line. And,
yeah. How elderly was he when we say elderly?
Well, he wasn't as elderly today as I thought he was in 1986, because we're now about the same age.
Yeah. We define elderly differently, don't we, everybody?
Exactly. He was, I guess, around 70.
That's a pretty young elderly. It really is. And what I wanted to also say is that we usually, now, I don't know if this may be a stereotype or it may be a truism, but when we think about elderly driving, it's usually those that cause fatalities are those that are driving too slowly or wrong way driving. Does that fit with your experience? And this was not the case.
Yeah, no, you're right. As a general rule, yeah, the majority do fall into those categories. And I just wanted to go back to something while I'm thinking of it. You were talking about dealing in my situation with other people who have, for example, for the crime wire cases and so forth. And I got to tell you, the loss of a loved one, especially a child, you know, obviously it is what it is, and you can't, there's really no adequate description for it. But
right.
I got to think that when you at least know, such as through an accident or an illness, when you know what happened to that person, it's one thing, and it's got to be just that much worse when these people who we deal with on Crime Wire, who know their loved one or their child was murdered, and the murderer has yet to be caught and is still out there somewhere. And a lot of these parents know, or they have a strong suspicion of who the guy is, and the police say, well, you know, we're just a little short. We just need a little more. Maybe we can make an arrest.
Right.
So, you have to deal with that tragedy and devastation of the loss itself, and then you got to be thinking, my God, my child was murdered. There's somebody took my child's life, and
yeah,
either they have no clues, or you know, ends up as a cold case, or it's one of these deals which we run into from time to time where everybody in the community knows who did it, instead of including the cops, but they can't prove it. And
right.
Can you imagine knowing or believing in your heart that somebody murdered your child, and you're walking down the street or going to the store or the restaurant and run into this person?
I can't imagine. And I know what you're saying. And I wonder, you were saying with respect to, I know all of the data that I've read previously, out of any types of tragic deaths that there are, the loss of a child supposedly is the worst with respect to being able to deal and cope with it. And my understanding, although my number might not be entirely accurate, but the divorce rate among families who actually lose children, and I know of some personally here in Connecticut through homicide, it's something like 80% to 85%, because you just can't keep it together, and or you grieve differently or grow apart or whatnot. So I totally agree with what you say. It's got to be a double, triple victimization for those families that maybe know who it is, they don't have enough evidence, et cetera. And, no, I can't imagine whatsoever, Denny. But with respect to my comment about coping and whatnot, How do you and Faith keep it together in the glue of your relationship? Because I have to say that even though this tragedy took place, before I ever knew about it, you were the most fun, funny people to be with that I ever met in my life. I just have to say that. So I think you really have turned the corner with respect to how you deal with other people. And Delilah, you may know some of that as well from working with them, you know, longer than I have, but really they are such fun-loving people. I love them.
We love you too, Dana. But I needed to, you were absolutely right about the 80 to 85%. That was part of what the therapist told me.
Is that right?
She had Denny come in.
Divorce.
Yeah, the divorce rate. Denny came in a couple times and talked to her as well.
Yeah.
I think what it was, we kept the communication open. Denny wasn't very verbal prior to that. He kept his feelings in.
Right.
To me, anyway. You know, I don't know what he told other people, but he didn't tell me a lot. And it got to, I had to talk. And so we would talk it out. And one of these times, I remember I was so angry, and I said, this is not fair.
Yeah.
And with that, Denny said, and who told you life was fair?
Uh-huh.
What an eye-opener that was. He's right.
It was.
We all have heartache. We all have grief. We just have to learn how to live through it. As far as fun-loving and being happy, nobody likes to see you cry all the time.
Right.
It's a lot easier to live in a happy environment. Nobody wants to hang out with a bummer, you know?
Go ahead, Dan.
That's true.
Yeah. But don't you think too, sometimes when we can get to the point where we look outside of our own situation and we can look outside and we see so many people out there that really suffer worse than what we did?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it seems that it takes so long for that veil to come down to realize that, but it seems to me that that's kind of a turning point where, you know, you can look outside of your own tragedy, you can look outside of your own self and put yourself out there to extend a hand to someone else and uplift
them. And that's
healing,
too. Yeah, that's therapeutic. And that's why we do what we do, right, everyone?
Absolutely. To talk to somebody and let them know that they aren't alone. That helped me to help them. And a lot of the letters that I wrote, I always added, the morning will come when you will wake up and it won't be gray anymore. You'll look out, see the sunshine, and hear the birds sing. That'll be your beginning.
That's wonderful. Hey, here's a question for you. Do you recall the first time that you laughed after you started the healing process? I mean, to me, that might stand out after you've gone through such devastation and such tragedy. Was there anything that struck you funny?
Recall.
And then you can
you
tell
felt guilty
that?
If you had a good time. You felt guilty if you laughed. The,
right.
The guilt complex because she was gone and she couldn't live was horrible. But I remember one night at camp, we were in a campground with RVs.
Yep.
And one of the gals had gone into bed early, and it was about, I would say 11 o'clock at night, and we started shooting acorns at her camper. I laughed so hard I woke her up. And
shooting
that was an opening, the beginning.
Now, Denny, can you answer that question for me? Do you remember when's the first time you laughed after everything that happened with regard to Kim?
Well, I was kind of like two different people. I had an entirely different personality when I was working, when I was on the job. And, you know, cop stuff, you have a lot of the so-called dark humor and so forth. And I, so I yucked it up, not yucked it up, but I, you know, tried to act normal when I was at work with my colleagues and so forth. And I don't remember the specific incident, but I do remember it was up at camp, like Bear said. It wasn't the acorn, the infamous acorn attack, but it was up at camp. We had a lot of great people up there, and, you know, they were very supportive when all this came down. And afterward, we took a lot of comfort from those people. And they had ways that... you know, to brighten up your day and to...
And you had fun with them, or you enjoyed yourself.
Yes, and you know, I wanted to just say one other thing we haven't talked about is...
Sure.
Yes, can be an awful strain on the family going through this kind of thing, but you also find out, too, it can put a strain on relationships with friends.
Absolutely.
Because the friends have no clue how to handle you. I remember we were out after this happened within the first couple of weeks or so, and we'd run into people we knew. I'm not mm-hmm. saying we were tight socially, but that we knew well and were very friendly with. In the grocery store, they'd see us and they'd head for the next lane.
Yeah.
They did not want, they didn't know what to say to us. They didn't know
that,
what to do.
Right. That is so typical. Yes, I know. And that doesn't that feel awful? You feel like you have leprosy or something, and it's not your fault, and it's just the fault of people really not knowing what to say if you have never been a victim of crime. And as Delilah always likes to say, that she never wants to be, and I hope she never is, but we don't want to ignore. But, you know, people don't teach grieving in school. Do you think there ought to be a course or something?
There should be something so that they understand, and especially as a grieving parent or family, to know they aren't alone. My first thought, as I started to come around a little bit, I thought, oh, my God, I'm a statistic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, isn't that a crazy thing to think? But your mind goes which way but loose.
Yeah, it certainly does. And I wondered, Denny, were you allowed whatsoever to participate in the investigation of what happened with Kim, or do they totally put the kibosh on that?
No, I did some private stuff just on my own, but nothing official. It was in a different county. I was a deputy in Madison County, and this took place in another county, so I had no jurisdiction there. And my boss, the sheriff of the county, of course, kept in touch with the sheriff from the other county. So, and I was able to get some information and get some help from them, but nothing in an official status. It was strictly as a private thing.
As a courtesy because of the profession you were in, right? Or
yes.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, when I look at the information with respect to people driving, and particularly elders, they say that there are three behavioral factors in particular that contribute to these stats. One is poor judgment in making left-hand turns, drifting into the traffic lane, or decreased ability to change behavior in response to an unexpected or rapidly changing situation. And I think that last one maybe addresses what happened here. But they also talk about signs for people to look to, and I wanted to ask you about what the legislation may be with respect to this scenario in Nevada. But they say signs may include, you know, for when people should be thinking of giving up their license, and we all know they don't want to, a pattern of close calls, violations or collisions, increasing difficulty in noticing pedestrians, signs or objects or other vehicles, or an observable decline in physical abilities or rapid onset of fatigue from driving, as well as changes in vision. And with me working at an agency for the blind, we have an arrangement with our Department of Motor Vehicles by law that if someone is statutorily considered legally blind, we have to report them to the Department of Motor Vehicles to revoke their license. Right. I don't know if that happens in all states, but did you ever feel the cause to become involved with respect to trying to address fatalities of this nature for other people, or kind of jump on that bandwagon?
Well, what I did do was we had, as a policeman, you would see certain people who you knew should not be behind the wheel any longer. I mean, you could just, some of the things you mentioned, a pattern of consistent behavior. And I never was comfortable with this because I didn't want to be responsible or contribute to someone losing their independence or feeling they lost their independence by losing their ability to operate a motor vehicle. However, policeman aside, just as someone else who has to share the roads with people, I would, if I found a person who was, I felt, a hazard to themselves or others on the highways, I would contact their family. I didn't write tickets. I mean, it wasn't my thing unless I absolutely had to. But I would contact their family and say, geez, you know, what do you think about your mom? You know, I've been seeing her, and every time she pulls out of a parking lot of a store or something, there's a screeching of brakes and horns blowing, and, you know, she's going to get hurt someday or hurt someone else. Have you considered any options as far as, you know, maybe she should give up her license voluntarily? And,
Are you talking about pattern of conduct, as Susan would say, pattern of conduct with respect to how they drive a car?
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody can have a lapse. I mean, I don't care if you're 18 years old or whatever, you can have a moment when you're not paying attention.
Right.
But when you see, as you mentioned earlier, the pattern, when someone's always too slow, always making a wrong turn, always getting in altercations with other drivers because they cut in front of them or that type of thing. When that becomes a regular habit, I mean, somebody's got to take notice of that and do something. And a lot of times the family member, the son or daughter or wherever the closest family member was, would appreciate that. And rather than
a heads up,
Coming down where all of a sudden you get a letter from motor vehicles or something, that the family maybe can do something and start thinking about alternate arrangements for transportation and that type of thing before anybody does get hurt or before it has to become a formal action by the state.
Right. It's a very difficult, very touchy issue, very emotional thing because, again, you're taking away their independence. Just as if someone's going from their own home independently into a skilled nursing facility, kind of the same kind of scenario. These things are very, very difficult, and it wreaks havoc on families, you know. But if the shooter, you talked so eloquently about, you know, your friends in the grocery aisle running away, and I remember that so clearly in my case. If the shoe were on the other foot and you were the other people spotting your friends, who what would you have done, or what would you advise now? You know, would you run away? I don't think you would, knowing you.
My thoughts on it I'm not talking about being overly aggressive with it, but when you find out that a friend, especially a fairly close friend or a close acquaintance, has experienced that type of a loss, is confront it. In other words, I don't mean be a nuisance, but go to the wake. You know, maybe depending on your relationship with them, maybe stop at their house, maybe say, is there anything I can do to help? I think the longer you let it go, because and you can make the excuse, well, geez, they're probably, you know, all the family's there now, I'm not going to interfere. Well, that can be an excuse, but I think the best thing to do, again, without making a nuisance of yourself, is contact the people, stop and see them, go to the wake, whatever, but confront it and let them know you care. Let them know you're there for them if they need you. And because the longer you put it off, it's not going to get any easier. At some point, you're going to have to see these people.
Right.
You're going to bump into them somewhere.
I so agree with you. Yes, and it is. And people just avoid anything to do with death like the plague. It's just, you know, not something that they want to do. But we all have to face this, and it is true. In the last about 6 minutes or so that we have, I've a couple other thoughts, and then I'm going to throw it over to my co-pilot to see what else she may have. Was there any remorse expressed by the family, you know, the businessman, his family? Did they make any kind of overtures to you? Did they do anything?
We never heard from any of them. I actually thought that the young man that was driving would come to the calling hours, along with the girl that introduced him to Kim and Trish, but he never ever came back.
Wow.
No. And as far as what Denny was saying about when we have friends or acquaintances or whatever who lose a loved one, we always try to send mass cards or call and say, is there anything we can do? Or Denny will drive in the funeral. There's always something you can do.
Yes, I agree with you. It is, and you know, before we end in a couple minutes, I want to be sure also that Denny, would you please give the contact information for your radio shows, because they certainly are popular, and we want to make them even more popular. But before we do that, Delilah, do you have any other questions that you might want to ask that we haven't covered this evening?
Well, yeah, I think the burning question probably in everyone's mind is where did Faith get the nickname Bear?
That's a good one. Yes, tell us that.
Well, that's when Denny and I were dating, and I had been married before and had three little ones. And being alone with three kids, they had to eat and Mama Bear didn't. So I
had a feeling it had something to do with Mama Bear.
Dad. And I had a brown coat, and the coat was too big, and he just looked at it and started laughing and said, "If you don't look like a bear." And that was the beginning, and I'll be darned, it stuck.
And that stuff from your courtship all the way over. Can we ask how many years have you been married, or is that too personal?
No, not at all. We've been married 35, going on 36. It'll be April
21st. Holy cow.
That's great.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, you know, you two are certainly an inspiration, and I'm so glad that I've made your acquaintance and your friendship. And
as we are.
Well,
we
thank
you. We were met you and just took to you right away, Donna.
Well, yeah, we kind of were stuck together like glue, just like Delilah and I were at the Q conference too. You know, we're kind of stuck together, and I think this is a great Imagine Publicity family here. I love it. Denny, can you give in for contact information on your websites and your shows and your books so that other people can be sure and check those out?
Absolutely. My website is DennisNGriffin.com, and the middle initial is N as in Norman. And, of course, Crime Wire on Blog Talk Radio. We're on every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. from 9 till 10 Eastern Time. And we profile cold cases or suspicious death cases and get into a lot of the stuff that I mentioned earlier about these poor people who aren't getting justice after someone, you know, close to them has been killed. And some botched police investigations where something that very well could have been a homicide is treated as an accident or suicide. So we get into all that stuff.
Right.
And
how about your books? How can they get your books?
All my books are available on Amazon. If you go on Amazon and put in the search bar Dennis N. Griffin, I've got 11 out, and all 11 will show up. And a half of them are now available on Kindle as well.
Oh, great. And I know, Bear, you're Faith of Kindle. I mean, you're a fan of Kindle, right? You do a lot of Kindle.
Oh, yeah. Denny bought me a newer one for Christmas, and I'm just getting used to that one. I had finally figured out the first one. Now I'm playing with the second one. I love them.
That is good. Can you give us just briefly some parting words of advice to other people who may be going through this kind of circumstance with accidental death? What would be your best advice?
My first thing would be don't be afraid to show your feelings. This, okay. As you said, Donna, and as my therapist said, losing a child is the worst thing anybody can go through. Don't be afraid to let people know you're in pain. The second thing is go for therapy. If you think you need it, don't be afraid to do it. There's all kinds of agencies out there, all kinds of support groups. Compassionate Friends is the national group, and they are wonderful. Just knowing you're not alone, that is so important, because at the time you think nobody else understands.
Right. Well, that is so true, and I hope that you'll come back and talk about some other topics, Denny, sometime, but you're very gracious in agreeing, and I want to sign off. Thank you so much, Delilah. Thank you, Denny. Thank you, Faith. And remember, come back next week for Shattered Lives, and when it comes to helping survivors of crime, don't just try. Make it happen. Thank you. Good night.
Bye, Donna.
Bye, guys.
Bye.